Well, I can't remember the last time I diverted from the lectionary. And I did, much to the surprise of Jean. I suddenly had to read Romans Cold, and did a very good job, by the way. And the reason why I did is because I was, as I mentioned last week, that preaching out of Romans, that it was sort of a two-part sermon, almost, because I just don't see how that you can talk about one without the other. So it never even crossed my mind to look to see if the lectionary had kept us in Romans 14, as I expected them to, but actually it takes us off somewhere else altogether. So I thought, as I've said before, I'm allowed to divert from the lectionary. I'm finally going to. I'm still not sure why I feel kind of strange about it, but I think maybe that's part of what we're going to be talking about in this very passage. But I wanted to talk about this part of Romans 14 from the perspective of weakness and love, and I wanted to do it for a couple of reasons, and I realized one of them is that this is for me, as is so often the case, as I've said with my tongue more or less in my cheek, that preachers speak to themselves and you get to listen. That's not really the case, but sometimes it almost is. And this whole idea of weakness and love, or strength and love as the case might be, is one that's extremely important to me, because seeing this lived out was extremely critical to my development in the faith. And what Paul is talking about here is something that is that's very straightforward. This is not something that is new. What it comes down to, as much as anything, is Paul is saying, don't let something that's okay for you but not for somebody else cause problems. And this is just, as much as anything, it's common courtesy. The problem is that sometimes we mistake sort of where we fit in this whole thing. What Paul talks about, and what he uses the metaphor, if you will, of food. And what he's talking about here, and even more so earlier in the chapter, is at that time of human history, frequently when you went to the market to buy food, you would get food that had been offered to idols and then offered for sale, or had been blessed by a particular god and then offered for sale. And because this happened primarily with meat, not so much vegetables, obviously there were, you know, in the great pantheon of Greek and Roman gods, there was gods for everything, including grain, so it's not like that was impossible. But primarily what people were dealing with was meat, the flesh of animals that had been offered to some miscellaneous god, or had been blessed by some miscellaneous god. And some people, followers of Jesus, dealt with the whole issue by saying, well, we just won't eat meat. We will be vegetarians because we don't have to worry about it then. And it's quite possible, I've come across some commentators that say that the meat that's being talked about here is the meat that you purchase. That a lot of these people who said they were only going to eat vegetables only ate vegetables unless they went out and caught whatever it was themselves. You know, if they knocked a pigeon off a branch with a stick, they'd eat it without any trouble. The vegetarianism in and of itself wasn't a religious thing. What they were doing is they were avoiding the possibility of having anything to do with the Roman or the Greek gods. And so they had made this into some kind of a way that they followed Jesus, that their vegetarianism was an expression of their desire not to split their loyalties between the true God and these other false gods. And so Paul, through this chapter, talks about how we need to make sure that we don't lose sight of what's actually happening in this whole thing. And he talks about how some people can eat anything and they're okay with it. Some people can only eat vegetables and all that. And, you know, don't look down on people who can do something you can't. That was what we talked about last week. And this week he's talking a little bit more about the fact that you can eat anything shouldn't be any kind of an opportunity for you to, in a sense, sort of rub the fact that you can eat steak in somebody else's face, because you're not acting in love. For these other people, and Paul puts it in the perspective of weakness, for these other people, the eating of meat is such a significant issue that it can actually destroy their faith in God. And if you love these people, then you're not going to eat meat in front of them, and you're not going to suggest that they should eat meat. You're not going to make fun of them when they don't eat meat. All of this is completely straightforward. This, as I said, is common courtesy. No one that I've ever met who is willing to invite someone into their home is going to serve a vegetarian meat. They're not going to sneak it in just to see if they can tell. They're not going to give them a roast. They're just not. They're going to prepare a delicious vegetarian meal of which there are millions. Because that's just what we do. So why does Paul take any time at all in his letters to the church at Rome to talk about this? Well, there's a couple of things going on in here. First of all, there's just the ongoing help that we should, or the reminder of how we should live our lives. But there's also a bit of a subtext in this part of Romans that I think we need to pay attention to. And we see it alluded to from the very first verse, from verse 13, where in this translation, this is the New International Version, Paul says, "Let us stop passing judgment on one another. Instead, making up your mind not to put a stumbling block or obstacle in anyone's way." And this is the crux of the matter more than anything else as far as I'm concerned. Is that when it comes to issues of weakness and strength, the biggest problem isn't that some people are weaker than others, because that just makes sense. Whether it's physical weakness or whatever else it might be. It's this whole idea of judgment. And that's what it comes down to me more than anything else. And that's what I want to talk about. And that's what made me divert from the lectionary to spend some time in this passage, is to talk about this whole idea of being judgmental. And we may think, and it's easy for us to think, that what Paul's talking about here is that for those of us who are strong, who are able to eat anything, we should not be judgmental about those who are weak. And that is true. But that one's easy. The far bigger thing is that for those who are weak, you need to stop being judgmental about those who aren't, about those who are strong. Judgmentalism comes from both sides. And very few people are going to fall into, very few people are as likely to fall into the trap of being judgmental about those who are unable to do what they do as those who are from the perspective of saying, "I can't do this, therefore nobody can." There's a peculiar stream of legalism, particularly in conservative evangelicalism, that is based on what we don't do, not on what we do. All the way from the little aphorisms that were still in play when I was in youth groups and such. Let's see, what is it? I don't smoke and I don't chew and I don't go with girls that do. There's about a billion things wrong with that we won't even begin to get into. But what it is it's this shorthand that says that on the basis of some obvious personal habits or choices, I am going to put you in a category. And yes, there are some categories that we can put people in fairly well. If you kill people, you fit in a murderous category, and it's very nice and straightforward. And for that matter, you can put people who, for example, smoke or chew, and put them in the smoking and chewing category. It's the second half of that I have a problem with. Why shouldn't you go with girls that do, or boys that do? What's the issue here? The issue here is that we're saying that on the basis, there are some behaviors that you cannot do and still be in the faith. You'll look in the Bible for a long time to find most of the things that when I was young were told you couldn't do and still be part of the faith. The Bible does not address smoking in any way, shape, or form. I'm not saying you should smoke, by the way. When I quit smoking, it was the worst 2 years of my life after that. It was horrible. Which is why one of my goals for my children is that they didn't start smoking. And they finished high school. And when they did those two things so far, I figure I'm an okay parent. The Bible doesn't talk about drinking particularly from a moral perspective. It talks about getting drunk. Other than that, drinking is just part of the world. It doesn't say anything whatsoever. Because when I was a kid, you didn't smoke, you didn't drink. If you did those two things, you obviously weren't a Christian. You probably couldn't be one. Dancing, you couldn't do that either. my particular stream of evangelicalism said that dancing was evil, and so you couldn't do that either. And so I can still clearly remember going to people who told me that and say, well, what about all the dancing in the Bible? It's never bad there. David's wife got in trouble because she made fun of David as he was dancing. David didn't get in trouble. So what's going on? Well, it comes down to this idea of trying to define each other by what we don't do or what we do without spending any time trying to figure out what's actually going on. And the thing that really put this into, or sort of helped me more than anything else, was almost a throwaway remark that Joe Aldrich has in his book, Lifestyle Evangelism. A great book, well worth your time, even now, when it came out. It revolutionized the notion of how we share our faith. And Joe Aldrich is just a really warm and wonderful person. Every interaction I've had with him, very secondhand. And he talked about how important it is for us, those of us who are strong, to not do those things to those who are weak that cause them problems. And that's what Paul's talking about here. He says, you know, it's important for us to not eat meat if it's going to offend people, if it's going to knock them off their faith, or their road to faith. But he said the one thing you do have to watch out for is the professional weaker brother. And he then went through to unpack this, and I realized that I had spent so much of my life responding to these professional weaker brothers and occasional sisters. They tended to be men in my growing up, so the brother part worked pretty well. People who would tell you that you couldn't do something that you were okay with because of their perspective on it. Because they couldn't do it, no one could do it. And what Aldrich says is that while you certainly have a responsibility not to derail the faith of those around you, he said you also have a responsibility to resist people who are using their kind of legalism to limit your authentic faith in Christ and your freedom in Christ. And he talks at length about how this is certainly a can be a ticklish proposition, but you need to realize that there are people out there who will use the perspective of their weakness to control you because they want to control you, not because they're actually weak. And this came home to me when I first came to faith. As I've mentioned before, I came to faith in my 20s. Knew all this stuff, but didn't really make any difference to me in a real way until I was 26. And I was living in Saskatoon and going to church there, a wonderful, warm church, and had people in it, so it had, you know, challenges here and there. And something came back to me at that point. This was in 1988, so things weren't quite the same as they are now, where, you know, piercings and tattoos and such are sort of everywhere, whatever we think. And back then, I got my ear pierced, which was just one of those things I had meant to do for a long time. And it came back to me that this was causing problems for some people. That's all it was. And nobody ever came and talked to me about it and said, you know, your earring makes me want to throw up, take it out, or anything. You know, it was nothing like that. It was this vague world of problems. It's causing problems. And so one of the pastors in the chair of the elders board asked to meet with me. And I thought, oh boy. So they came and they said, look, you know, one of our responsibilities as pastors is to make sure that things work in the church and to, you know, sort of have conversations wherever they need to. Sometimes we don't like them, sometimes we do. That's just the way it is. So here it goes. Yes, some people have had some problems with you. And there's two of them. Number one, I wore shorts to choir practice. The choir practiced on the stage of the sanctuary, and apparently this was disrespectful in some strange way. This is a non-air-conditioned church in Saskatoon in the summer. I figure if you're not wearing shorts, you're if you're a woman wearing a skirt or something, you're deranged. But, you know, so, and I thought, no idea. Well, I can wear pants. It's only for a couple hours. I said, and there are some people who have a problem with the fact that you have your ear pierced. They said, so why did you get it done? Like, is this a sign of rebellion? And so I talked about it and how it's just one of those things. I said, it wasn't rebellion. I mean, who was I rebelling against? I lived on my own. And interestingly enough, I waited till I lived on my own because my dad didn't particularly care for earrings in any human being, men, women, children. He thought it was ridiculous no matter where. And so I waited till I moved out because he didn't want to see it all the time. And so they listened to this and they said, okay, well, said this is, and I'll never forget what they said. I don't remember it, obviously, word for word because it's a long time ago. But they said, we need to ask you to do something for us. And it might be kind of painful and uncomfortable for you. But when it comes to earrings and shorts, we need you to keep wearing shorts. And we need you to keep your earrings in. Because these people need to grow. They said, these are people who spend their, in our church, who spend their entire life looking for things that they don't like. And telling people that they can't come to this church because they're doing things that they don't like. And we've talked to you, and what you're doing is not some kind of rebellion. It's not, you're not throwing in somebody's face. If nothing else, I mean, I'd offered to take them out. And they said, no. I said, and the thing that was so interesting for me is they said, this may be painful for you to have to put up with these people judging you, but we're asking you as a favor to continue wearing your earrings so that these people will realize that the externals of life don't necessarily say anything about the internals. And that anyone who knows you and has taken the time to know you, get to know you, realizes that these have nothing to do with your faith. That they are not an expression of anything other than who you are. There are days, not so much here, I'm not so much in Knox and St. Mark's, but obviously I know lots of religious people and church people, and they talk about what's going on in their church, and I occasionally despair about the church. And I go back to that moment in Saskatoon in the evening of the summer of 1988, and it gives me nothing but hope. That people were willing to look at what is actually going on when there's conflict about what we should and shouldn't do. And not drawing these distinctions that say, here is a black and white rule for every behavior in the church, but rather, there are very few black and white rules. And we take the time to talk to the people, to find out what's going on, and to see where is weakness and where is strength, and where are people acting in love. Paul talks about, it's better not to do things if it will cause your brother to fall, or your sister to fall. But I think Paul is also saying that if someone's sole intent seems to be to prevent you from doing anything that they don't care for, you're not doing them any favors. When it comes to weakness, there's a huge range of weakness. And sometimes we address weakness by not doing things. But sometimes we address weakness by telling people that you need to strengthen that part of you. It's a tricky proposition. To this day, the pastor and the elder who came and talked to me, they could have gone the other direction and they wouldn't have been bad people. But in that particular situation, they knew all the players involved and they moved everyone in a direction of strength because they loved the people involved. They didn't say, keep doing this action because it pulls somebody's nose, because we like winding them up. They said, do this because these people need to grow. They need to stop focusing on these simplistic external things at the expense of what's actually happening. They need to stop looking at somebody from the outside, making no effort whatsoever to find out what's going on in the inside and coming to conclusions about that person. And they felt I was strong enough to put up with that, and I was. But only through their encouragement. They taught me something about the church then, about true strength, about true love that I will never forget. That says that the way we address the weakness in others needs to be tailored to their weakness. The weakness of an alcoholic is not strengthened by drinking in front of them. But the weakness of someone who loses their temper easily is not strengthened by never talking to them, so you never give them anything to get angry about. It's by helping them to see that not everything is about them. Helping each other to become stronger can be hard work, because it really means that we need to listen carefully, we need to ask questions, and we need to hold on to what we think is important pretty loosely when it comes to the externals of life. But it is so worth it. I'm not given to making predictions, not even in hindsight very much, but I sometimes wonder, if I never would have had that conversation, would I have the same kind of confidence in the church that I do? The same kind of hope about the church? If those two hadn't taken the time to figure out what was going on and address me in the way they did, would I have ever turned into somebody who sees such tremendous value in preaching every Sunday? I love what I do here. Would I have without that? I don't know. But I like to think that it had a lot to do with how much I love the church. Problems and all. Challenges and all, because I've said before, the church, any church that lets me in is going to have problems eventually, or any human being in. But when I saw that, when I lived through that, it was a picture of how important it is to interact with the people that we're in church with in love, but with all of them, not just the easy parts. And it stayed with me forever. Weakness and love, the church is filled with one, but if it's filled with the other, we can address those weaknesses and maybe even turn them into strengths.